Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Friday. Race fans, Memorial Day weekend celebrants. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964, if you're listening to Sirius XM Online. And at our website, stevebick.com. Memorial Day weekend, and it sure feels like you can have your picnic, your barbecue, your family gathering, your friends. I know we're not, you know, we're not completely free and clear, but we're getting close. Everywhere I've been this week, it actually started even the week before in Baltimore. You could sort of sense, and with the various pieces of news, in particular for us in this area, the news yesterday that Saratoga Racecourse will operate at, quote, near capacity, and Governor Cuomo himself. I guess I'll ask Pat McKenna. Pat's going to join us at 10:30. I hope that the Governor Cuomo ran free admission past Naira before he just opened the gates and said, "Okay, everybody, show your Excelsior pass and you can come in free opening day at Saratoga." From what we can tell, I mean, from the initial reaction, and obviously, you know, in fact, as recently as yesterday's show, we brought that up a little bit. The expectation that vaccination proof, and here in New York, we've got this Excelsior pass on the right on your phone on an app. It can be scanned and whatnot. But if you read the full press release from Naira, the CDC card that most, that anybody that has been vaccinated has had filled out, that'll be proof enough. And for out-of-staters, I mean, in particular, things will certainly feel normal at Saratoga. That's the bottom line. And people that were wondering or worried about the season pass and the weekly ticket, that it's all happening. Everything that you would expect under normal conditions is going to be in place. We're waiting for some specifics, and I'm sure part of that involves on the indoor side, on the seating indoors, for dining rooms and, some of that part, the stadium seating, down the end of the grandstand, the top of the stretch section, and et cetera. Some of that, still has to be ironed out. But if you're thinking about and were worried, should I make plans? The answer is yes. Pat McKenna will join us at 10:30, and we'll get more specifics about the season. So, good news there. A couple of things that today also ties in, and speaking of seasons, opening day at Monmouth Park. And it's certainly a a lead up like none in memory because of the New Jersey Racing Commission's rule regarding the crop. And I'm going to address this first because I don't think we're going to, we're not going to really have anybody, we're not going to talk any other specifics later in the show, I don't believe. So let me get a couple of things laid out based on some legwork done this morning. The principles involved here, there is not going to be any addressing of this rule by the Racing Commission through any negotiating stance or conversation. They're not going to entertain it. They're not going to, unless the court case has some say, there's a stay of the rule that would then require further legal wranglings. The idea that the riders and anybody else are going to get this rule changed, that's not happening. It's simply not happening. So under that backdrop, the riders that have taken calls, and it seems that some of the rhetoric has died down between jocks and Monmouth, who is really was kind of put into an awkward position here. I mean, they've got a meet to run, and this, despite their opposition, this was put in place by the New Jersey Racing Commission. So get that locked into your heads. I mean, that's the way it's going to be. And we'll see how it plays out in terms of the actual racing and the satisfaction levels for everybody, for horse players, for stakeholders, trainers, owners, and the riders. There's no other way to approach this than to deal with what will transpire from here on out. Regarding two of the riders and the flood of misinformation regarding Ferran Peterson and Nick Juarez, Ferran Peterson had days from the stewards in Maryland this week that she served through today. Her suspension, her days, are over as of today. So she can take calls tomorrow, which she has done. Nick Juarez had days from the end of last year, and he took one day today on the limited card, and he and his agent, Carl Fiorentino, they asked for a stay of the remaining days to be served later in the meet, which is standard practice and not unusual. And the claim that all they put the rules, they changed the rule. They didn't change any rules. Nick Juarez asked to have the days stayed for later in the meet. And that happens at every oval with every jock that gets days. It's not some special dispensation that Monmouth crafted. I mean, it's just astounding that the eagerness that is out there to create a furor and chaos when it isn't necessary. That's why Juarez is taking mounts as of tomorrow. Just amazing to me. Just feeding into a frenzy that is completely unnecessary. Best of luck to everybody, the horsemen, owners, players, riders, management at Monmouth Park, one of my favorite places and one of the favorite places of countless people in the sport. The action today, I forget about Memorial Day weekend, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. We'll worry about the Monday action that hasn't been drawn. Really the only, you know, the major stakes action for Monday at Lone Star. And we'll probably, Nick will be with us, actually, Nick Tamaro at the top of hour two. And we'll probably have a Monday, we usually have a holiday Monday visit from Nick. So maybe we'll, wouldn't surprise me if we do some Lone Star with Nick. But there's still quite a bit of the Monday action to be drawn. And that includes, of course, in New York, we've got a New York Bred Showcase card Monday. And you've got, I think the All-American, right? The All-American at Golden Gate. You've got a couple more nice stakes to be drawn at Santa Anita for Monday, the Gamely, the Gold Cup, and the Shoemaker. And I think those are the major, right? Yeah, that's pretty much the major. Yeah, those are the ones yet for, but everything else is in place, and we'll cover a lot of it today. Before we start, you know, Marty McGee's going to join us first, because you know, Churchill got a nice, yeah, really nice card tomorrow. Today, there's a bunch of things happening. We went over, you might have heard the conversation with Todd Mostoller about Penn tonight. Starts at 6, the four straight stakes, and a quick weather advisory as it is. It feels like, I looked at the forecasts in pretty much up and down the eastern seaboard and out to Grantville, and I think there's going to be some rain there, but they should be able to get these in by, you know, 7:45 is the Penn Mile. The rain is going to start apparently after they start the card, so we'll see. In New York, it looks like the rain will come overnight and a little bit into tomorrow, but I think we might be okay. I mean, they're certainly going to be protective of the turf course. I mean, I think the Pennine Ridge won't be a problem, but they'll be as protective as they can, even with the rails up, protecting it for next week, for Belmont Stakes Week Festival action. There's going to be rain this weekend. There's no stopping it. But at least for tomorrow, it feels like we might kind of dodge most of the bullets. The three events today that are worth noting, I want you to, and I'm sure Ed DeRosa, when we talk to Ed at this hour, will contribute. Belterra, again, with those $500,000 Best of Ohio Stakes, and they're really good. I ended up sort of looking. I don't know if I'll. A couple of different things drew my attention. Pimlico has got $115,000 pick five carryover. Yeah, the late pick five races 5 through 9 starts at 240, $115,000 carryover here, and there's two races in the middle of it that have smaller fields, a nickel claimer as the 7th and a good allowance race as the 8th. You might be able to tiptoe around those two with fairly narrow opinions. There's an 8-5 second choice in the allowance Airport that may be able to sit very nicely behind a great deal of speed that's lined up in here. Looks like, looks to me, this is a Mosler, as it happens. And I thought that Ortiz could just tuck in behind. There's three speeds on the outside. So Airport might be a useful lien in that allowance. This is worth looking at if you haven't, if you weren't aware of it, or hadn't, you know, hadn't really considered. So a great lead-in to the weekend, to the holiday weekend. And then we get to Churchill for tomorrow and everything else. Cross country, pick five. You've got, I mean, pretty much everywhere you look. The action at, obviously, at Churchill. And in fact, Case, we could go ahead and give Marty a call. We're gonna work quickly with Marty. He's got a full dance card. But today, tomorrow, the Aristides, the Audubon, the Blame, the Douglas Park, and the two graded stakes, the Matt Wynn and the Regret. The Regret is terrific. And there's also the Shawnee. So, big stake card to talk about at the Downs. I'll give you the lineup while Casey accesses Mark. I mentioned Ed DeRosa. We'll get Ed in, get some opinions from him. And see what's going on at Twin Spires. Nick Tamaro, Pat McKenna, I told you to expect. And then later in the show, we'll swing back through to the Ville and talk to Scully. We'll get Hammer. Santa Anita, you know, I know people saw the Saturday card and were deflated about the small stakes fields, the Daytona and the Whittingham. The Whittingham, you know, had trouble rounding up horses to face United, 3-5 in there. And then the Triple Bend, 5 in the Triple Bend, 5 in the Daytona. Sunday's card has a much more robust set of fields. Summertime Oaks, the stake, but the rest of the card, if you look at that Sunday, I think you'll be pleased if you want to play Santa Anita this weekend, and we'll see about how they make out for the Monday card. But you know, the stakes are tough. There's just a limited pool to draw from. Here he is, Mark.
Bick.
Good morning.
What's happening, Bick?
Another big. You got the next big Saturday for the Downs, and this is fun. This is a good card.
Yeah, this is the biggest day racing clearly we've had here at Churchill since the Derby 4 weeks ago. And we've got six stakes worth $150 each, and then the finale, which is a big race because they are making it the last leg in the four-stat Derby City pick six and the pick five and the pick four and the pick three. So, yeah, it's the last race is the $110,000 Douglas Park, and I did my research on Douglas Park. It was an old Louisville racetrack that died in 1958, the year before you were born, Big. And, yeah, so it's a pretty good turf race for older horses. I guess the Cox will be favored in there with, what's his name? I don't have it here in front of me. Somewhere I got it. The horse that won last time. Anyway, it's a pretty good race, though. He doesn't have to win.
No, group of nine in there. And isn't Douglas Park where they say, over toward
the airport?
Yes, and that from an aerial, from air, like if you're in a hot air balloon, that you can make out the where the track was, even.
Maybe formerly. You know, I used to drive by, because when I was a kid, I'd go to Miles Park, which became, and a lot of people don't remember this, it became Commonwealth Racecourse in its dying days. This had to be late 60s, early 70s. And I remember in high school, they actually tried to keep it revived, high school or maybe early college. It became a quarter horse meet. You know, they'd run these quarters, and that probably lasted only a year or two. I remember attending those and betting on them. I must have been old enough to bet then. So, anyway, they said you could see the outline, and you could. You could see the outline of Miles Park, the old Miles Park. It was right off 264 on the south side of 264 as you drive by. no longer. And I really doubt, Vic, if you can still see the outline of Douglas Park. They said it's covered over by, I read a pretty strong article about it, covered cool. over by apartments and all kinds of commercial development.
I forget who told me that at one time you could see the
I don't doubt that at one time, because those things, you know, you'll see old pictures of the old Green Mountain, and I think somebody put something on there about Long Acres not too long ago on Twitter, where you could see a little remnant of it, but yeah.
Here too, at Saratoga, you can the original course, which is, you know, is now over on the Oklahoma side, and that layout, you know, still there's still remnants of you know, of it. That's the same. But I even read a thing recently about, I think, the Chisholm Trail. They say that that you can still, there's still places where the wagon wheels, you know, where the impression still exists. It's pretty funny.
Yeah. That's, well, then your man Hammer, he's always sniffing.
That's
out
right.
When he's making the drive from Arkansas back to California, so you know, you got that.
Exactly. Let's look at some of this, Mart, and. You mentioned the I'm glad you mentioned the Derby City force out and everything else. There's even the Audubon, which goes as the fifth, that starts a middle pick four, the fifth, sixth, seventh, and eighth. Let's walk through these real quick.
Fifth race is the start of it. I've got Palazzi on top there.
Yeah.
I thought it was pretty much a wide open race. There's a lot of things you could go for there. Like the King, of course, everybody's always intrigued when you have a Derby horse returning. Didn't run real well in the Derby. He was actually the longest shot. He won the prize. He was 49.90 to 1, making him the longest shot. Again, not even close to 99 to 1 anymore. And Keep Me in Mind, for the record, was the second longest choice at 49.00 to 1. Anyway, you know, like the King, he's got to be a 6 to 1-ish. Type of thing as Wesley puts him back on. I've got Palazzi in there. The next race is really interesting with the old hard knockers like Silver Dust and Night Ops and the Blame, that, by the way, was run last year, inaugurated at a mile when, as we all remember, Cox had Owendale come screaming home to win. This year at the mile and an eighth, it's a more apt prep stepping stone to the Stephen Foster, which, of course, will be run here 4 weeks hence on closing day, June 26th. So this is designed as a prep for the Stephen Foster. I've got the Canadian champion, Mighty Heart, on top. I think Michael Tagley made him 12 to 1. I don't think we're getting that. There is more speed in this race than there was in the Ben Ally at Keeneland that Silver Dust was on or near the lead the whole way and winning. I thought this was pretty much a pretty salty race, and it does start off the Derby City pick six. Next race is the Shawnee. It's a prep for the Fleur-de-Lis. En Boutant, Paris Lights are clearly the favorites. En Boutant is 4 to 5 on the line. If she runs back to her races, I really needed her to win the La Troyenne. And looks like she was a dead winner at the eighth pole, but no, she was turned back. I would end up hitting a real nice pick four with that if that had come in. So after that, I'm all Team Cassie, Beck. I've got Spanish Love Affair in the Regret. I have Helium in the Matt Wynn, and I've got Tap It to Win from the Open Air outside box, where the air is fresh and clear, unlike as it was for him in the Churchill Downs on Derby Day, with Tap It to Win from Post 10.
A couple of things, because you started the Audubon mention with Like the King and the Derby returnee. You also have, as it happens, you got Sainthood returning in New York in the Pennine Ridge, and then of course in the Matt Wynn, the Helium and Obesos.
Yeah. So let's see. This will be the first Derby other than Medina Spirit. This will be the highest placed finisher returning from the Derby since Obesos was fifth. We have yet to have the second, third, or fourth place finishers come back. So They've got Obesos 2-1 and Helium 5-2. I think that's about right. It doesn't seem like there's a whole lot of speed in there, and that's why I give Helium the edge, even though he did come from off of it in the Tampa Bay Derby. It seems like he has a little more tactical ability than Obesos, and going just the, you know, both of them turning back to the mile and 16th, I'm going to give him the edge.
You know, I'm going to slip this in because we seem to have touched on it with Derby returnees. I've got to thank and acknowledge Ryan Rushow, who sent me an email yesterday, Mart, that next week when you and Dave are focusing on Belmont coverage, Ryan has unearthed the tidbit that if Keep Me In Mind doesn't participate in the Belmont, and the last I heard, he was, Diodoro was leaning Ohio Derby, then this will be the first Belmont and the first Triple Crown since 2010 where there wasn't a horse that participated in all three Triple Crown races.
Look at Ryan.
How about that?
I like it. You know I like that kind of stuff, Vic.
I know you do, and I that's why. And I wanted to make sure to get this in because I thought it was great that he was poking around and did this. 2010, 2006 was the previous, and then you had to go to the 80s, 83 and 82. There wasn't a horse that ran in all three events, and from 82, you have to go all the way back to 1934. To find one, to find a year that there wasn't a horse that participated in all three races.
You know, there's been years when you've had really obscure horses run in all three of them, and the one that really lingers in my mind is, I remember writing about the 91 Preakness at Pimlico, and we were talking about how you keep trying, we were referring to Easy Goer and Sunday Silence 2 years before in 89, like, a lot of guys who do public picks, like, you just picked either Goer in every race or you picked Sunday Silence in every race. So we were talking about how I'd gotten off Hansel from the Derby and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, and so I asked Eddie Gray, the former Boston Herald writer, who now works for the Notes team for Gulfstream Park and Pimlico, et cetera.
I know where this is going.
I said, have you ever done that? He said, yeah, I did it last year. And the year before that was Unbridled Summer Squall and horses like that. He said, I picked a horse in every race. And I said, who was it?
Maine Minister.
Said, he said, Land Rush.
I'm like, my God.
What?
Land Rush?
Yeah, Land Rush. He ran in all three races in 91. I'm like, who is that? You know, it was a Lucas one.
That's great. That's pretty great. I love
next
it.
Next time you see Eddie Gray, say Land Rush.
That's great. That was an Overbrook. That was an Overbrook horse.
Yeah, and he was probably like seventh, fifth, and sixth, or whatever. You know,
too funny. Oh, yeah. I thought this was going to somehow involve Maine Minister, right? Who's another obscurity.
Oh, he's far more well known than Land
Rush. Yes.
So, yeah.
Yes. My, that's pretty funny. My horses along those lines. Speaking of Lucas, Yonder was one of my favorite obscurities. In fact, in New York, there was under the grandstand, down by the barbershop, there would be on big days they would have like almost like a flea market sort of thing, and there was a guy that had that would set up with embroidery equipment. And he had all these hats, Mart, that had horses already in there. They were already embroidered, and there were chestnuts and there were bays and so forth. And then he would put, you know, whatever you wanted to write above the horse, he would embroider on, you know, in 5 minutes. And I had to have Yonder, who I just loved and really never went. It was okay. And Lost Mountain was another one that I loved like that.
Tell me you still have them.
I do have the Yonder hat. Yes, I will take a picture of it and put that up. People, I'd love to know who remembers this from the bowels of Belmont. Yeah. You know, down by the barbershop.
Well, in memory of me being on the show, and I'm leaving you here shortly. Put that on instead of that hideous picture you put of me on last week with Derby Barbie. So yeah.
That was you look great. What was wrong with that picture?
Come on, Vic.
You look.
Well, it's better than me attacking the frog legs. I'll say that.
That's my favorite. Come on, that's my favorite picture. They never had a chance.
Have a great rest of the show, Vic.
Marty McGee, everybody, DRF McGee, bringing you. We'll talk more about these races too, with James and with Ed. In fact, Casey, reach for go ahead and get Ed in here, and we'll keep this going. The funny thing about these, I'm so glad that Marty did that, and him saying like the king just made me realize, you know, that I had noted that Sainthood is running in the Pennine Ridge, and you know, we had talked to Greg Foley early in the week with you know, Obesos, and then Helium turned up in here as well. You know, Helium, considering, you know, the 8 weeks between the Tampa Bay Derby and the Kentucky Derby, Helium did not run badly at all. Ended up eighth and, you know, beaten 10 lengths. You know what? I haven't even seen the. Let me compare the. I'm always so eager to look at races when they draw the races that I print out the PPs early, you know, before morning lines go on, and you know, then take a look later on, and then I'm frequently, you know, disappointed. You know, you go to look at the morning line, and it turns out, you know, the horse that jumped at you, you know, his second choice. Yeah, Helium's 5-2. Folsom, 5-2 as well, who does deserve discussion in this race. And Sitting on Go, who perked up, obviously, in the Pat Day Mile and ran okay, trying to, you know, kind of get his mojo back. And speaking of mojo and back, Ed DeRosa joins us. Good morning. Let's try that again. Eddie.
I'm here.
There we go. Ed DeRosa joins us. And Ed, I know that you got plenty of work later, you know, for the Churchill card, but you've got to be just, you got to be just jumping out of your skin for the Best of Ohio action today at Belterra.
I'm definitely going to take a look. Unfortunately, with the way, you know, the Memorial Day weekend things shake out. You know, Churchill kind of the priority. So that's all I've handicapped so far. But looking forward to decompressing after Churchill Downs today with Joe Kristofek, and definitely taking a look both at Belterra and that pick five carryover at Pimlico.
Mm-hmm. And then it all feeds right into the graded action with the Penn Mile at Penn National starting at 6 p.m.
It'll be a marathon weekend because, you know, as I mentioned, Racing Monday, Churchill Downs and Twin Spires has some great promos at Lone Star, so I'm going to want to help support that with some of my own handicapping thoughts. So hopefully a profitable but certainly a long and winding road from early Friday afternoon through Friday night, or excuse me, through Monday night.
Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, we don't even know yet some of the cards to we're going to look at for Monday. I'm going to save that, actually, for, you know, we always, the holiday Monday opportunity, we kind of do a little hybrid recapping and looking ahead. But, that, you know, certainly the Lone Star action, and good luck to everybody that is heading to Grand Prairie and are going to take up the opportunity with Brandon Lee and the team. A lot of seats for NHC. I'm going to get awarded between now and through Monday. So we'll look ahead. But right now, let's focus on the task at hand. And Ed, you mentioned promotions. Let's get some TwinSpires news and action in here. What do you got?
Well, certainly for the home team, want to remind everyone a lot of bet back offers throughout the week, both internationally and here in the States, including at Churchill Downs every day, Memorial Weekend, including four races today on Friday. So check that out. And a rare BrisNet offer this weekend as well for $20. And this starts with Saturday's daily selections. But for $20, you can get those for every track all weekend, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. That's at brisnet.com/plans. So for those who like to avail themselves to the written thoughts, a little more written analysis than just picks, daily selections, great for that. So that's a special promo we have going on. And then Lone Star, it's not on the page yet, so you can't opt in just yet, but make sure you get to twinspires.com/offers for their big stakes bonanza. On Monday, we're doing a $5,000 hit and split among the stakes races. Whoever has the most, whoever cashes the most $20 win bets, splits a $5,000 pot. So if you sweep the stakes, you might be in a good spot to get the whole thing. But even if it's just three or four, we think it should be worth a few extra $100 to those who have the most. So excited to support Lone Star in that way on Monday.
Excellent. Plenty of analysis, too, to help, and actually some fun reading. I see John Mucciolo's got some stakes analysis up and ready for perusal. And
Kelly has her international thoughts on the prospective Belmont Stakes runners as well. I know there's some interest in Rebel's Romance. Kelly always an indispensable read when it comes really to anything she writes, but certainly one of her niches being the international competition.
Well, and actually, I should really link that. I didn't, I got to go. Okay. I got to go to this page. Cause you can't scroll down like you used to. You have to do the drop down.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. All right. Got it.
PBS. We'll hope to bring a better user experience when it comes to that sooner rather than later.
There's all kinds of stuff. I mean, once you get there, holy cow, you got a bunch of sports. Yeah, I hadn't even noticed this.
If you're into golf, our boy Scott Schaff is. I'm not a big golf guy, but he has a good way of writing about it. So for those who play DFS golf or anything like that, I definitely recommend what he has to say.
Very cool. I love it. All right. And who's on? Speaking of which, you got Churchill Downs. Inside Churchill Downs tonight with Scott usually and
KK. Yeah, I think Darren and Kevin are both back this weekend as well.
Okay, so. Yeah, because they're right. Because somebody who was out,
Gary P off the bench last week.
Oh boy, they let him near a microphone.
I think Scott had strict instructions of index finger on the dump button.
I love it. All right. Well, let's dive in here. Marty kind of rifled through and gave us his top picks, and I'm anxious to flesh these out a little bit more, Ed, with you as well. And that includes the sequence, the Derby City pick six force out. What do we expect that pool to hit?
Well, we had to sweat a jackpot last night. Half the field was live to the pool, but thankfully the favorite obliged, as John G would say, and Wesley Ward got it done late to preserve the carryover, which is now, I believe, just shy of 100,000. We put out there $500,000, which yeah. I thought admittedly was maybe a little aggressive if we're just hovering around that six-figure mark, but I guess you could say it'll be $500,000 with the carryover, so that's fair. We're at 97.7 today, so I think new money, $400,000, $450,000 is reasonable.
Very good. All right. Well, even before that, we do have that middle pick four, the races 5, 6, 7, and 8. Talk about the Audubon.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, and I think I lost a bet with Joe because I said, no, it's an all-stakes pick six. And he said, I know, but there's a stakes before that. And it is the Audubon, which I wonder what race I was forgetting because that one I remembered in my head. I looked to the outside. I thought Royal Prince kind of got shuffled back a little bit. It was a really fast pace, and I think people will say, oh, you know, why didn't he close a little better? He actually did pick up a few horses, which you would expect with that kind of pace. He was 2-5 before that at Sam Houston. And I think the horses I've seen come out of Sam Houston have been running just fine. And we got 16-1 on him in the American Turf. And, you know, it didn't work out, obviously. But I remember liking that price then. Much shorter price against this group in the Autobahn, but I'm not going to give up. I thought circumstantially, just the way that race was run, he was up against it, and with this outside post, hopefully a better trip under flow.
You know, and if you're looking at toward the inside between Palazzi and Like the King, you know, there's a horse in here that caught my eye last night. Our friends, the Ulwellings, and the Air Force Blue gelding making a seasonal debut in here, going a mile and an eighth, and it's Hadassah, and you know this is kind of a sneaky, this is a sneaky horse in here, because first time as a 3 year old, you know he's going to be completely glossed over, you know, first time on turf. You know, ended up at Woodbine on the synthetic and breaking his maiden at first asking, going a mile and 70. He's going to be completely overlooked here, and I'm really intrigued by this. You know, he's been working at Woodbine in anticipation of the meet starting. He's an Ontario bred, and I'm sure that Bill and Al and Kevin Attard are you know thinking, you know, down the road toward Queen's Plate.
Yeah.
But I would really, maybe this is the kind of horse that you just wait till we look at in the paddock and see him warm up on the track. That horse is very intriguing in here at 15-18-1.
Yeah, I can't talk you off at that price. My thought is the magic words there being Queen's Plate, and I forget what the date of that is this year. I know it's not the traditional end of June. August, okay. You know, they probably mapped out, and I have to think that's the goal, and, you know, they get to find a spot here where, you know, could be competitive. You got an 82 versus that speed rating out of the box, and he's the only foal out of the dam who hasn't won on turf yet, and that's obviously circumstantial. They tried turf on the debut and got washed off, so you know, clearly some versatility with the surface, and you know, they get a mile and an eighth, and I'm sure they're pointing for a mile and a quarter in August. So I like the ambition for the spot, and with you know, Woodbine not opening for a few weeks, it makes sense why this one would show up here.
Yeah, and you know, it'd be one thing if the one start was a you know 6 furlongs, that'd be one thing, but he debuted at a mile and 70, and won and went favored too, so he was not a secret, even you know 11 horse field too. So I'm intrigued. That's all.
Well, that'd be a good jump to any multi-race sequence.
There you go. Exactly. The Blame, we're going to go a mile and eighth on the main track, and we got some very familiar names and faces in here.
Yeah, we do. I'm going to go to the Well again, such a homer, but I thought Night Ops was interesting to me at the Slop at Keeneland, just half a length behind Silver Dust there. I just think they're close enough, you know, and Silver Dust, what a warrior, first or second here, I believe puts him over the $1 million mark. So, you know, this is a fun race from that perspective. But Night Ops, refreshening, five-year-old, does have a couple wins in 2 seconds at Churchill. I just think found a spot that he fits here, and just going to play him to turn the tables on Silver Dust.
Yeah, fair enough. I don't.
Yeah, not overly exciting. I mean, I thought Sprawl and Silver Dust were the other two, and they're going to all be very similar in prices. So, you know, one of those situations where I kind of wish I had a thought to a Mighty Heart, you know, at a nice price, but I just couldn't make it work.
What is, let me just see, what is, that's a, South, what's South Bend? 6-1. There was nothing wrong with that performance of South Bend in the comeback race at Keeneland. Well, not at all. So, all right. I'm undecided there, to be honest. That one's going to wait till the morning until I start typing. the Shawnee, a mile and a 16th on the main track for the Phillies and Mares.
Well, this is hopefully I'm not losing anyone here, but to me, this is the most likely winner on the card. Andrew Tante just seems beyond these. You know, free scrolling through, just looking at the Brisnet speed ratings and be eager to see how it looks on the other stuff. And usually when it's this clear, I'll actually look at it buyer too, just to see if it really matches. But I mean, Invitante, 101, 96, 97, her last three. There's not a filly or mare in this race who has even broached the mid 90s. And 5 pounds in my mind just isn't enough to make up that kind of spread. So this is definitely the spot where I'm not going to be looking to add to my ticket at all in any way, shape, or form. She just looks the one to beat. And I know she's going to be the universal single. So in my mind, for that mandatory, it's kind of a pick five. And where can I maybe dodge a chalk elsewhere in the sequence? But this isn't the spot.
Well, I hear you. There are some candidates that are, you know, within hailing distance, but you know, when it comes to ticket building, you know, you bring up a very fair point. You gotta find somebody you can lean on heavily. The first of the graded stakes, the two graded stakes, the Regret and the Matt Wynn, go as the eighth and the ninth, and I thought the Regret was one of the best races that has been drawn so far for the weekend.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I'm going to lean on two here. Definitely respect Spanish Love Affair, but as the chalk, I don't know that, you know, she's that leanable, and we've already discussed the zest for Envoûtante, and even in the Blame, the logicals make a lot of sense. So to me, Spanish Love Affair may be an opportunity to at least, you know, pick off a horse who figures to take some money. I'm not overly creative beyond that. Gam's Mission and Saranaya are the two that I plan to lean on. But Cherie DeVoe with Gam's Mission, second, pretty quick turnaround after that brief freshening from the Fairgrounds race, and had a long layoff from 2 to 3, but I thought, you know, ran great on debut behind Aunt Pearl, then won that race at Fairgrounds, and then came right back and won again against several familiar rivals in this race. Now it's a mile and an eighth, but being by Noble Mission out of a War Pass mare, they might be disappointed there's not a lot of mile and a half races for Philly. So Gam's Mission, would love to see her, you know, bring Cherie back to Belmont, maybe for the Oaks over there, a race like that. I think she has the look of maybe one who can really show us something this year.
This group, I mean, for those that are fig, you know, fig users, in this case, we're looking at Thoroughgraph. You got a field of nine. The entire field on their best numbers are separated by a length and a half.
Wow.
It is as competitive from that standpoint as you could, you know, as you could possibly want in a race. When I see that, my first inclination is to then, you know, let's look at the pace scenario and see if there's anybody favored. And as opposed to anybody being necessarily favored, it's really not clear how much speed and where it's going to come from in evidence. How did you measure up who's got the lead into the turn?
With Shariev and two in there, I kind of thought made sense that Post-Nup, given Gam's mission, her clear style, which doesn't need to be far, far back. She was mid-pack, last out when winning the allowance, and she was last to seven at Fairgrounds. But when she was last, her first net pace ratings were actually a little quicker. So always, there's always that interesting nuance with field size and, you know, where you are in the group. But all that said, I did kind of think, okay, well, Post-Nup, you know, maybe is the one they send. She's been closer than her uncoupled stable mate before. And then Spanish Love Affair.
Yeah.
I have to think they're especially going a mile and an eighth, which is new for her. But, you know, that appellation just was kind of not her style, and the results of that sort of reflected that maybe she was out of her element. And, you know, one of the great things, especially, you know, if he figures it out in the short turnaround time, but I think with the Cassie barn, he's willing to give him another shot. And, you know, this has been a few weeks, but, you know, sometimes they go on the shelf for other barns and not Mark. So, you know, I'm a little nervous about, you know, being able to go so against Spanish Love Affair, but if Mike has it right of how the public's going to bet it, and, you know, based on what you just said of the spread in the thoroughgraph, why would you take a short price here if you're using Envoûtant? So
I agree, and there's certainly something unique about the way this race came together, and that is how many of these, you know, are coming out of the same, you know, two races, the Appalachian and the Edgewood. And from that standpoint, the two inside runners are the fresh faces. I mean, you kind of know what you're getting with everybody from the three hole out. But Oyster Box and Money for Row, they're the ones that are you know, the newcomers to some degree. As it happens, Oyster Box was behind Jouster in the Florida Oaks. And then, of course, Jouster turns around and wins the Appalachian. So the freshest of the fresh faces is Money for Row, a horse that that Lynchy, I know, thought something of and made a step forward even in defeat, you know, in coming out of that allowance against Gam's mission and flown. So I don't know. I think this is fascinating, and it's also the first leg of the cross-country pick five to add to the pressure and the importance of it. That gets us to the Matt Wynn, and sort of the theme of the morning, at least with Marty in the last half hour, was, you know, the Derby runners, four of them on display Saturday in New York and in Kentucky.
They're back. I'm going to try to go against the pair in here, and we have Like a King earlier on the card. But I do think that there's a premium that Helium and Obezos will attract money, in part because they were in the Kentucky Derby. They're known names. I thought both of them ran fine, you know, especially Obezos. You know, he was picking up late and, you know, never really a threat to win. But I think fifth is a check in the Derby. Certainly fourth is if he gets put there. And Helium, you know, given the preparation, I thought ran fine. I mean, he was in the mix, and his stablemate, who was right in front of him, ended up last with some excuses associated with that. But, you know, Helium stuck around a little bit. And given the prep and the layoff into a mile and a quarter race, I think we saw some real talent there that, you know, Mark sort of hinted at he thought he saw in the Tampa Bay Derby, which he called one of the best races he's seen. So I respect him, but I think they're going to be over bet. And the logical alternative to me is Folsom, who has seemed to put it together in the last two. Interesting to me that this one has not gotten, you know, much of a break. Brad's run them consistently. The workouts are consistent. And he's a trainer that I've come to notice just has no set program with his horses. And I know, you know, there's some frustration about why Mandaloon didn't run in the Preakness or why he didn't show up here and he's going to Monmouth. I just think Brad knows he's so part of what makes him so good is knowing where these horses should be and how often they should run, et cetera, et cetera. And they don't all fit a, you know, quote unquote program. And to me, Folsom, seeing these running lines and the workouts between, they finally found dirt for him, which seems to be the part of the key as well. Florent Giroux back aboard. He won the maiden a few back. But the two-race winning streak and the improvement without it being drastic improvement and the fact that Brad brings him back here off the 4 weeks rest, to me, tells me he's going in the right direction, and I just think we're going to get the right price over the Derby runners.
I don't disagree. I was kind of hoping that that he would be, you know, a better, a more attractive price.
Yeah.
But...
I think he'll be, I mean, not that we're splitting hairs, I guess, 3-1, 7-2 versus 5-2. It's hard for me to see all three at 5-2 or lower. So I'm thinking the Derby starters will get the boost or lack of boost, I guess, because of the name. And Folsom will be comfortably the third choice.
You know, I'm just looking inside that horse, Anil Pessence. I'm going to have to look at another. I'm going to have to go back and look at Ready to Pounce, who's going to get a cozy trip. That feels like a dangerous horse in Brian Hernandez's hands.
Anytime Neil leads one over, I'm worried when I don't have, especially at a price. And this could be a real separator. So I sort of echo your thoughts of definitely. Probably merits a closer look. 90 speed rating last out, which you know, certainly in the mix of what anyone else has run to date. So further improvement, you know, third career start and getting out to mile on the 16th definitely makes dangerous.
Gets us to the Aristides, and you got an interesting mix in here. I know who I'm rooting for. I became a big fan of Empire of Gold last year after the Phoenix and talking to Terry Off, and you know, the fact that Declan Carroll was on him and had the first chance to ride in the Breeders' Cup, and this is a fun story, the Golden Sense Colt, and I don't see why he can't win here.
I don't either, and the only deciding factor for me not putting on top, I picked him second, was the disparity in price between the horse I did end up landing on. But certainly Empire of Gold, who I remember giving a long look to in the Breeders' Cup at 50-1. I forget exactly where I picked him, but he was prominent for sure. Unfortunately, much, much less of a price here, but it's definitely in my head that if I liked him enough that day, you know, that he certainly fits with these. But I put Sir Alfred James on top, just kind of allured by the 8-1 morning line. But this one cut back last time and got the win here at Churchill Derby Week. He's 3-for-5 locally. He's 2-for-2 at this distance. And Al Stahl, who was seemingly unconscious Derby Week, those horses are now, you know, this is the time for them to cycle back and return. And you know, Colby up, who's a jock I definitely like using, and he's the one for me at 8-1. But definitely Empire of Gold in the mix as well. But at that price, enter Alfred James, I just couldn't resist putting on top.
Yeah, I can understand. There sure doesn't seem like there's, you know, an obvious, I suppose, I don't know, I suppose Bango can try to go with Empire Gold, but I don't see anybody that, you know, that really wants to run with him. I guess
Edgemont James?
I don't know. I don't see why he doesn't lead them on a merry chase. All right, let's get to the nightcap, and here is the Douglas Park. And Marty and I talked about some Douglas Park history, and off there, off that's got to be that's sort of Preston Highway and right a Poplar Level somewhere out in that, you know, from that angle. What you doing here?
I went with Ramsey's solution, thinking of would be fresh for Wesley, who I tried to beat, I don't know, maybe three or four times at Keeneland. He had some layoff horses, and I don't think they won every one, but they won enough where I definitely came out on the wrong end of that calculus. And he's back here with this one, you know, five-year-old debut, and I just think this Ramsey solution with Julian up, I would love to see the patented front end ride where, you know, he just keeps saving a little throughout and has enough in the lane. You know, the layoff part of the gamble, but it's 6-1. I think we're getting the right price. And, you know, even if not on the lead, because Pioneer Spirit, you know, maybe is a front end type. Gray's Fable, I guess, probably has to go from the outside if he doesn't want to be caught too wide. So maybe it's a tough trip, but I do think Ramsey's solution will be in a position to get the jump on set piece.
I thought, those are the obvious players. I also thought that Parlor deserved a glance. Talking about seasonal debuts, the 7-year-old gelding, Lonro gelding for Michael Way and the Hooties partners and Mike Maker.
I got to, it's the first time I actually talked to Michael Way. He had a bomb in last week's listed stakes. I actually thought liked a little bit, and he made a middle move before flattening. But I wish everyone had his enthusiasm.
He's great.
Great to see someone so excited. And you know, he doesn't play at the high end, but he's been very fortunate. And I asked him, you know, because there's owners like Maggie who definitely love digging into the sheets and solving the puzzle and finding the right claims. And I asked Michael if he was more like that, and he said he leaves it all up to Maker. So he's just along for the ride. But it's fun to watch the owners who clearly enjoy it, and not that they all don't, but you know what I mean. He's fun to have around the paddock.
No doubt. I had a conversation with him, if not last year, it might have been even in 2019. Casey and I will look and see when it was. And we had a really fun discussion. And he was really one of the first key Maker owners that, you know, was pioneering the, you know, the 62.5 claim, the $75,000 claim, the $80,000 claim. And it's really worked, and in fact, it is spread to other Maker clients. I mean, it's become you know, a format. In fact, Michael and I talked about it after his big weekend in Baltimore 2 weeks ago. So, it Michael Way, absolutely a game. The game needs as many of these as we can get.
Yeah, well, it's a great game theory study, because I mean, really, before he came along, and then, you know, Doug O'Neill, we remember some success too out in California, kind of with that level. But you know, it seemed infrequent, and I think I'm sure a lot of owners and trainers thought, well, no one ever claims at this level, and you know, you can find a value because people think you're sort of protected at that type of price for a tag. And if you, you know, took the time to look, and in Michael Way's case, he trusted the trainer Maker, but it certainly paid off. And as you said, and we are, you know, I talk to trainers all the time when they have success with one owner, they're all ringing the phone, wanting to know when they're next. So it makes sense that it's spread, and it's good for the trade.
Well, I said to Baker, 2 weeks ago, I said, do you look at every single claiming race with the high tags? And he said, yes, we do, every single one. So, and I said, as I said to, as a cautionary tale for, you know, for owners, ask yourself, look at your horse's record when you consider a race, and say, if Maker looks at this horse at 75,000, would he take him or her? And that might have to be your, you know, one of your deciding factors in running those races. I don't want to inhibit anybody from running, but that's just a reality. Well, it's an interesting sequence, and you know what's funny about this, Ed? There's only one race. What? There's only one race with 10. That's the Aristides. 8, 7, 8, 9, 8, 10, 9. Really don't need, in this case, we didn't need 10, 11, 12 in each of these races. There's enough intrigue in them, that you're still going to have to manage your multiples.
Clever. I agree. No, obviously, Andretant is a very likely single on a lot of tickets, but, you know, past that, there's, you know, maybe you're excited about a single, but there's no other horse like that, certainly, and I'm definitely willing to lean on Folsom, but I certainly know I'm putting myself in a position to get beat by two, maybe three others in there. But you know, you gotta take a stand somewhere that you think the public has it wrong. So that'll probably be mine, is Folsom.
A very nice Saturday at the Downs, and then of course look ahead after this to Foster, to the Foster card. Ed, anything else for the weekend?
No, not yet. Unfortunately, there's a lot of Churchill focus. So, watch the Twitter feed. Hopefully, we'll drop a bomb or two.
Nice, Ed DeRosa, everybody, and the team. We'll talk later to James and get his thoughts. Nick Tamaro is going to join us next. Ed, good luck this weekend. Enjoy Memorial Day with the kiddlings and family. And we'll talk next week.
Sounds good. Thanks, Steve.
EJXD2, Ed DeRosa. A couple of minutes into hour two. Let's take a break. We'll come back. Nick Tamaro is going to join us. We'll get Nick's take on at least three of those races at Churchill. The 8, 9, 10th are the races that are in the cross country. You've got the Regret, the Matt Wynn, and the Aristides are the first, third, and fifth legs. The Belmont 8th, which is a turf allowance, and the Pennine Ridge go as the second and fourth legs. So we'll talk to Nick next. Pat McKenna, P. Mac Daddy, going to join us. Bottom of the hour, and we'll get all the details about Saratoga and the very upbeat news yesterday that will be virtually at capacity, as many people, it seems, as would like to come, provided you've taken care of yourself, your friends, your family, your coworkers by being vaccinated. Back after this. NTAM 1215. Nick Tamaro joins us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, LeaderShield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
A great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at pabred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 938-4643.
Sirius XM Sports presents